Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Well, you're going to think transporter and intruder alert, but in a good way, in a good way. Hi, welcome again once to Madam Perry Salon. I am your hostess and your cruise director, Jennifer Perry, or Madam Perry, or in Britain, Jennifer Maudette Perry, or J-Maud, but whatever. You can call me Jen. I just am happy that you're here, and I love you. And I want to say, if you're listening tonight, which is March 21st, if you're listening live on the Blog Talk Radio link, they'll see I think it's a hot pink or a fuchsia-colored rectangle with the words follow in white. And if you see that and you haven't done so yet, would you please be so kind as to click on that and follow the show, because the more followers I have, the more I can continue to get the fantastic guests that we've had recently, the fantastic guests we've got coming up, as well as the cool guy I've got here tonight. Anyway, and it helps me to get sponsors, too, so I can keep bringing this. Because let me tell you, podcasting you know, a lot of people listen to podcasts on the weekends. I do too. But lately, and I think especially since I went and did my presentation on harnessing wireless telegraphy for entertainment, or how to start a podcast at the Wild Wild West Con Steampunk Festival, ever since then, the numbers have just been up and steady up, not like up and down for a few, and up. It's been steady up, you know, hundreds of thousands of people listening a day. And thank you so much. And I hope to continue to make you want to keep listening and subscribing on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher. Monday night we had, wait a minute. You know what? You've asked me about her. I hear people ask me all the time. They go, what's going on with Kenya? What's going on with Kenya? You know my BFF Kenya, the Thelma to my Louise, the Gail to my Oprah,
I like that Thelma and Louise. The apple to your Lucy.
Apple to her Lucy. And God knows she's lived to regret a lot of my ideas.
Never,
and
never.
Yet I still got her somehow. Yes,
I'm always
call her,
here.
You know. You always know, you may know her as the host of the
Everything
Glass with Kenya Colbert.
Yeah.
Everything Relations with Kenya Colbert. But everybody knows her as my BFF, the Queen Diva for real, Kenya Colbert. Kenya, welcome to Madam Perry Salon, and thank you for riding shotgun with me and co-hosting.
Always ready to shotgun. Yes. Hello, guys. How are you doing? I missed everybody. I haven't been here in a while. Wow.
Well, everybody's missed you, and that's why I'm so glad that you were able to co-host tonight, because with your shows on hiatus, a lot of people have missed you, and everybody asked me about you. And so I said, okay, I'm gonna bring you Miss Kenya. I'm going to bring her so that you can they can enjoy you again and get you back on the airwaves again soon. But before we get into the show, you know, there's been a lot happening with you lately, Miss Kenya. And since you've been on the air last, you became an ordained minister.
I am. I'm a wedding officiant. Yes, I'm marrying people. So, you know, everything for me is all about relationships. Everything I do is about relationships and how to strengthen them and how to just be better people inside of ourselves so that we can be better people with others. So, yeah, I became a wedding officiant, and I actually have a wedding this Sunday. I'm excited about that. And I'm trying to, as you mentioned, I'm revamping everything relationships. and trying to get it back out stronger and better. And man, we carried that thing for years just like that. And it was time for an overhaul, so I'm overhauling. So thank you.
And tell us about, and what is Love Wins? I've been seeing that all over Facebook.
So that's a new part of the new show that's coming up. Love Wins Win. So that's going to be a little trick on word, a little play on words there. Love Wins Win. And on the show, we'll discuss when love is actually winning. Instead of always focusing on, you know, the downside of life, you know me, I'm always trying to find that silver lining, and I think I found a great way to incorporate it into the new show.
Yeah. In fact, last night I was talking to tonight's guest, and I was saying to him, I said, Kenya and I don't know why we're such good friends. We're so opposite. And I don't know if you've seen this video, but I shared it. Somebody put it on Facebook, and I shared it. And it's these two little dogs riding in the car, little cute little dog. Well, one's cute and fluffy and looking out the window looking like, oh, look out there. And the other one raises its head up and looks kind of, you know, like it's slept too hard. It has a sad look. Like, oh, no, and lays back down. And I said, that Kenya, this is me and you on a road trip. You're the cheerful one.
I'm up early drinking coffee, and you're looking at me like, get out of here.
You're opening the windows. I go, isn't that illegal at this time of day? Don't do that.
Oh, yeah, we have great road trips, so. Definitely.
Well, yeah. Well, just wait, folks. You know, we've been teasing you and threatening you and promising you, but you know, we have not abandoned our plan of having a tour bus road trip of our favorite guests and authors. And so, since somebody praises us up a tour bus or gives us one, we'll have to. And we want one of those country western star type ones, don't we, Kenya? Because they're like a rolling hotel anyway.
Yeah. Really.
Oh, we want the one that somebody like Winona uses. Yeah. It'd be a good time. It'd be worth it. And people, you can ride on the Jennifer and Kenya tour bus extravaganza. And so don't worry about, you know, people I keep saying things about destination retreats and spending a few thousand dollars to go with somebody to sit and exercise and breathe and write in a journal. This will be much better than that. I don't know what we'll do. You don't know. This will be the best 10 grand they ever spent, won't it?
Oh, my God, yes. For $10,000, I'll give you a lot. I'll give you your money's worth.
Okay. Yes, we will. See, Kenya, we got to let them know. This is a high-value thing. Well, let's get to the guest, tonight's guest. Now, Kenya, you love science fiction. I grew up reading a lot of science fiction, too, and loving it. My guest tonight is one of the superstars of science fiction and fantasy. And he's got 8 novels out now. His most recent, The Woman of the Woods and Amber in the Hidden City. He's the co-editor of 4 anthologies. Books he's written with other people. And even you heard me talk about going to steampunk thing, you know, recently at Wild Wild West Con. Well, he has written part of the steampunk anthology. Kenya,
I like
Kenya,
it.
Who loves funk music?
Who loves funk more than you?
That's right.
Hey, I
have a P-Funk All-Star keyboard player. Remember Doug, my keyboard guy that was with P-Funk? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
so, maybe we'll take him too. But anyway, so let's just go ahead and welcome him in, Kenya. If you don't mind, just kind of open up the beaded curtains over there and let's fluff him up a nice cushion in between us so we can talk to him. Come on in, Mr. Milton Davis. Come on into the genie bottle.
Hey. Hey, how y'all doing?
Hello.
We're doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I think one of those bees hit me in the eye when I was coming through the curtain.
Yeah, you have to learn to duck quick.
Well, Kenya, if he says anything about using the L word, you know, lawsuit, I think we better pack up and get out of this. Get the hell out of Alpha Centauri, okay?
Yeah, no, then just duck the next time. They kind of swing back fast. You know, just duck a little bit. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are y'all doing?
We're doing
great. We're so happy to have you here. This is so exciting. We wanted to start off talking about, I mean, you, from what I understand, what people tell me and the things I find, you're a rather prolific author. It's like once you got started, you were just, you know, this stuff is just, this is what you were just born to do. I mean, I know you have a profession as a, did you say a chemist?
Yeah, I'm a chemist.
Wow.
And I'm going to ask you too how that plays in it, but were you always like Kenya and I? Were you always a science fiction fan as a kid?
No, that's the funny thing about it. When I didn't really start reading science fiction until I was in college, and
wow.
it was all part of a diabolical plan by my English instructor. I was more of a nonfiction reader and stuff like that. And when I got to college, I had a little bit of a talent to write, and I wrote a couple of essays. And my English instructor, her name was Anna Holloway, and we're actually Facebook friends now. She called me to her office one day and asked me. She said, "Well, you shouldn't be a chemistry major. You should be an English major. You should be writing." And
wow.
And I told her. And I said, I've done it off and on over the years. I said, but writers don't make any money, so I'm going to be a chemist. I can make millions and millions of dollars creating all these inventions. At the time, I didn't realize that was far from the truth. But she did was she started introducing me to science fiction, basically. She, the classics, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, Delaney, and people like that. And I started reading, and I thought, hey, you know, this stuff is pretty cool. And then she said, well, you know, you ought to try writing some of it, see if you can do a little bit of it. So I started playing around writing short stories and stuff, and she would read them and stuff like that, you know. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I played around with it for a while and got married and said, okay, I'm going to get serious about this thing. I took some classes and then life got in the way and, you know, I stepped away from it for a while. And then about 10 years later in the 90s, I started doing some research, and that's when I kind of went on my African Renaissance. That's when I really started researching African history and culture. And I got inspired to write again, but I kind of dropped off of it. And it wasn't until I think like 2005, around that time, when I said, look, you know, if you're going to do this, you might as well do it now. And that's when I started writing, and I decided I wanted to self-publish because I had done some research on the industry, and I felt like the stories I was writing would probably not be accepted by publishers. And I also kind of wanted to do it on my own anyway, so that's when I started doing my writing, and about 2008 was when I started publishing. And the reason there's been so many books is because there's been so much stuff building up over the years, and I finally get a chance to get it out. So that's where all that comes from.
Wow, I'm impressed.
and that's true. Yeah.
How's it going on? I guess maybe you have these stories still in your mind. Right. I'm sorry. I think I lost you a little bit.
There. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought I lost you.
Yeah, you did. I can imagine, though, until you started writing, surely these stories started off as ideas and just started to germinate in your mind, situations and things.
Yeah, one of the stories, that series, I just actually finished that series last year, was one of the first ideas I came up with when I was in college. And it's called Changa Safari. And it kind of evolved. Mm-hmm. It evolved over the years. And so I was finally able to start writing it when I first started writing. So it was kind of satisfying when I finally ended the series, because it was something that had been around for, I guess, basically like 30 years. And so to be finally able to tell the story the way I wanted to tell it and wrap it up was a personal accomplishment, you know. But yeah, the stories have been around for a while. And when I started writing, you know, I started being introduced to different things and came up with new ideals, and so it just, most writers have more ideals than they have opportunities to write them. The good thing about being self-published is that, you know, you don't have to worry about getting rejections. So
that's good.
So you know that's why you're prolific, because there's nobody to tell you can't do that. You know, you just ready to put out there. You know?
I love that idea. So can I ask you a question? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer. Sorry.
No, girl.
You
go
ask
ahead.
First and then I'll go. I was just wondering. So you said that, Milton. You said that you went back and then you decided to start doing more studies on African your lineage. And so, how did that turn into this sci-fi? This different. What made you take it that way? Like, because I think that's really cool.
Well, in the 90s, I say that's when I decided I needed to know as much about African history as I knew about European history. And when I started doing the research, that's what really got my passion going, because I've been writing stuff for a while and sending stuff out. And, you know, as you're a writer, you go from getting what we call form rejections, where they just see it as Xerox piece of paper saying, thank you for sending us stuff, but we don't like it. And you get to the point where you have editors actually reading your stuff and they're answering you personally saying, hey, you know, we read your story, we liked it, not exactly what we're looking for. And I had worked my way up to that point. But so I felt like sooner or later somebody's going to publish my work. But when I started reading African history, that's when I really found the passion. I said, I want to write stuff that's going to include this history and include this culture, these different cultures and stuff. And so when I decided to publish, I wanted to incorporate that, because there were people like me that I knew out there that were reading science fiction and fantasy, and they weren't seeing us in it. When they did see us, it was a lot of times in an unfavorable light. And so I wanted to write the kind of science fiction and fantasy stories that I would want to read. And so that's what started everything. That's what started me doing what I'm doing now, is just to make sure to write stories that if I was a young boy or the kind of stories I would have wanted to see on the show. So that's why I do what I do.
Excellent. Love it. Love it. Love it. My parents have got to get your books. I'm going to send them your books, because they are the ultimate sci-fi. They love everything. I'm telling you, everything to do with anything that's out of this world. They love it.
We got a few things for them.
They do. And they're both big readers, and they love sci-fi. And our parents are. I mean, if they like your books, they'll tell everybody to get them.
Everybody that they know.
And I got a feeling that they will. Well, what Kenya asked you was kind of what I wanted to ask you, except for I think it sounded more intelligent coming from you, Kenya. It was just about, you know, the African, going through African Renaissance. Did you go to Africa?
That's the one thing that I haven't done yet. I haven't been able to go to the continent. It's on my to-do list. The closest I came to it was, I actually have a nephew who went to work in Ghana for about a year and a half, and he enjoyed it so much that he ended up staying on the continent for a few years. He actually went to different countries. He visited Rwanda and Uganda. He was in the Congo, South Africa, and Ethiopia, and Zanzibar. He just went to all the different places that I always wanted to go, and he would send me pictures back, and we sit there and talk about it. Like, how was this? You know, how was this stuff like that? Because, you know, I was kind of comparing it to the research I had done and stuff like that. You know, so that's as close as I've come to it. But it is something that I do plan to do in the near future, because it will kind of like, it would complete the circle. Plus, you know, as a person of African descent, you know, to me, it would be a significant trip to take. You know, to be able to go back. And I just started recently doing my my sisters have been doing the ancestry DNA thing, and
my
and I just
sister uh-huh.
yeah. I just sent for my kit, because my youngest sister has really been delving into it, and it seems like the largest percentage of our family is from the Cameroon area. So it would be interesting to, you know, go back and visit that country and just kind of see, you know, just get that that firsthand knowledge.
Definitely.
My husband spent much time in Africa. Whenever he'd go, like 3 or 4 months at a time with his job, but mostly like on the Ivory, you know, Guinea Conakry and some other places. He did bring me back some beads that were blessed by a shaman from Senegal, and I figure if things go crazier in this country, that could be mine and many people's primary health care provider is my beads from the shaman.
If I know how to use them. I'm going to need my own.
Right. Sort of like joking, not joking, okay. But you, and before I forget to, well, no, I'll write it down so I won't. We talk, you know, putting out information about you or articles about you, and I'm looking at one from in Scottish Independent Press about you. You know, people talk about, you know, you write science fiction, fantasy, futuristic, but then this other term, this a fairly new term that's out, is being attributed to you, I think partly because of the popular movie Black Panther, and it's called Afrofuturism. So what does that mean? Because I think you know,
yeah,
you didn't seem to use it as much as other people use it about you.
Yeah, Afrofuturism is has become the go-to term to describe, you know, what I write and what a lot of other black science fiction writers create right now. It's kind of like the blanket term to cover what we call the black fantastic. It's usually referred to science fiction, fantasy, paranormal, anything. It's speculative fiction, steampunk, sword and soul, different things like that. The term was first coined in the 90s by a researcher who was kind of trying to describe some of the stuff that was being done by some of the black creative artists like Sun Ra and Parliament Funkadelic and people like that, that were basically taking science fiction and incorporating it into their work, but giving it an Afrocentric spin, you know, incorporating different elements from African culture, African-American culture. So they came up with the term Afrofuturism to kind of describe what that type of creativity. So now, you know, the term is being kind of revived to represent what we're doing from a literary standpoint, because the Afrofuturism movement wasn't really that much literary as it was more visual and musical. But now you got people saying, you know, that Octavia Butler, what she was doing was Afrofuturism. At the time she was writing it, she just considered it science fiction. You know, and most of us that write in that area consider what we do is whatever subgenre we call it. But there is a particular type of writing that kind of falls under that Afrofuturism term, which is kind of associated itself with that. And that's a lot of people who are writing the science fiction and fantasy now, black people, and they're incorporating a lot of aspects of the social conscious movement into their science fiction. And
that's cool. That's
cool. You have a lot of the new writers. You have people like N.K. Jemisin and new sister. I just can't remember her name. She just got a seven figure deal for her book of Blood and Bone. And a lot of these younger writers are kind of including this into it. And even you can even say Black Panther would be an example of Afrofuturism, because although it does find its foundation in, you know, African culture, some of the things that it talks about in the movie are issues that are relevant to African Americans and Africans and their relationships with each other and stuff like that, you know. So,
Definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, people
You're talking
right
about
now,
Children of Blood and Bone?
Yeah, Children of Blood and Bone. That's the book. That's the book, yeah. She had a seven figure deal for a movie before the book even came out, because she was she was part of a pitch fest, and she pitched the book, and they, and agents liked it, and everybody liked it, and said, hey, you know, we like this, let's run with it. So it's a writer's dream, basically.
What inspires when you're about to start working on something? Is it the cause, or, you know, like, do you have a mission that you, like, where do you start when you're trying to create this science fiction kind of, is it a problem and then you figure out how to solve it? Because that's what I would do. I would say, what is the major issue and how can we solve it?
You know, the inspirations come from so many different directions. You know, the only thing that's constant in my stories is that I always write with black main characters, and I always take a positive spin toward all the stories that I write. I'm trying to, you know, I'm writing about heroes, and I'm not, you know, and that kind of thing. But the idea comes from heroines and heroes.
Yeah.
I have my characters come to me and there's no rhyme or reason to it. You know, I've got Changa Safari, which is a black male character, and I have Woman of the Woods, which is a black female character, and of course there's Amber, who's a 13-year-old African American girl. It's just however the story comes or whatever character I think fits the story best, you know, that's the way I go. The ideas come from all over the place. Sometimes they come from music. I might hear a particular song, and that song may speak to me in a certain way, and I may see a certain story in the words. Matter of fact, I just wrote a story that was in a steampunk collection, which was based on was inspired by the song by War, "Slipping in the Darkness." And and art. Sometimes I see a piece of artwork, and that art I may see a story in it. You know, I look at the person in the picture, and I say, man, you know, what is that person thinking about? You know, what's that situation? And a story may come out of it. So, you know, it comes from different areas. That's one of the hardest questions, I think, for a writer to answer. And sometimes it does come from an issue. It may be an issue that you really concerns you. And you may say, I want to write a story that kind of talks about this issue in a fictional context, or I want to solve this issue in my story, that kind of thing, you know, bring this issue up and then try to provide a solution to it. So it can be a number of different things.
Let me just stop and say 1 second here. If you're listening live to us tonight and you want to talk with Milton Davis, the number is 646-716-9922. Again, 646-716-9922, toll free in the continental U.S., or you can just send me a message to the messenger on Facebook, and I'll be happy to ask him whatever question you have. I'll tell you what I like is the fact that you also have, you were talking about, stories for young people and young women. People want to see themselves in a book.
Exactly. That's the biggest weakness I think we have as black writers, is that writing speculative fiction, that there's an audience of young people out there, young women and young men, who are looking for stories that represent them, or that where the characters look like them. And Amber came from actually something that my wife, who's a teacher, she says, you need to write something for young kids. And I said, well, yeah, I want to, but I just didn't want to just sit down and write it. There'd have to be an idea that came to me that I was passionate about, that I wanted to write it. So for a while, you know, she was talking to me, you need to write something for young kids. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then that story came to me, and it came out of a situation, because I wanted to write a story that showed the connection between Africans and African Americans. And I wanted to show, you know, the similarities, the differences, some of the tensions and stuff like that. And that's where that story kind of came from. Even though it's a young adult story, and it's a light story, and you can have fun with it and stuff like that, you also see some of those elements in the story. And I was actually proud of the fact that once I got the book done, I had a writer from Zambia who read the book. Mm-hmm. And she noticed and caught all the things that I had worked into the story. And that's what I was trying to do, you know. So it was kind of nice to see that people from African Americans and Africans were reading stories. And well, actually, she was from Malawi, and there was another young writer from Zambia who read the story, and they were all kind of seeing, you know, the things that were worked into the story and stuff like that, you know. So.
Message.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost,
how does that make you feel that your books are going that far to people?
It's actually great. I mean,
yeah.
The technology today makes it possible. The fact that you can do an ebook and people from anywhere in the world can buy your books and stuff. And, you know, if it was 10, 20 years ago, that wouldn't be possible. You'd be restricted to a certain audience. But now, you know, I've got mm-hmm. people reading my books in Australia and India and Germany and stuff like that, you know, and it's nice to know that, you know, people are able to access it and that these people are all finding something about those stories that, you know, that resonates with them and connects with them and they are enjoying them and stuff. So it's really been, interesting enough, my steampunk books have been very popular in Brazil. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's been a... You know,
that is so cool.
It's funny when you find out where your books are selling and stuff. You know, it's usually not for the reasons you suspect, but
right.
People find their own interpretations. You know, so.
I was just thinking
what do you, that. Now, what do you mean by that? Not for the reasons you suspect. What do you mean?
Well, it's so funny because we talk about that sometimes as writers because I was having a conversation with Charles Saunders, and Charles is like the creator of Sword and Soul. He created a character called Imaro back in the late 70s, which is mm-hmm. he describes as a black Conan, and he's very popular in Sword and Soul circles. The people who know him, they put him on the same level of Robert E. Howard, who created Conan. And I met him by chance when I first began publishing. We had a mutual friend, and we talked about the fact that we both ended up, you know, writing almost about the same subject from the same inspirations, and, you know, him doing it like 20 years before I did and me doing it not even knowing about his stories and stuff. But to make a long story short, he was talking about a review that somebody had written about one of his books, and the guy was going into detail about what the story meant and all this kind of stuff, and Charles was like, yeah, he was talking about this and talking about that. He said, you know, actually, I wasn't thinking about any of that stuff.
Exactly. I knew you were going to say that.
He said, but it was kind of cool that that's what he got out of the story. So people,
it really is.
Yeah, people bring their own, I think they bring their own experiences to every story. And different things resonate to them in those stories. And sometimes, you know, you'll hear that person talk about it, and you'll go back and say, okay, yeah, I see how they could see that in the story. I can see where
exactly.
they got that.
Exactly.
Even though it was something that you may not consciously have been thinking about, you know. So, you know.
That is sort of like when you hear a song, and somebody writes a song, and they wrote it a certain way, but at the moment that you hear it, that might not be what you get from it. Like
exactly.
You picked up on a whole nother side of it. And then when you start talking about it, you're like, you know what? You showed me something else.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, and sometimes they make you question yourself, like, well, was that really what I was writing about? Was I subconsciously, was I actually thinking this when I wrote this story? That kind of thing.
Exactly. But interpretation, I love that, though. It's like art. It really is that interpretation. It's like when I'm reading a book sometimes, and the person that they might think is the hero might not be the hero to me. I see something else in another character, and I'm
mm-hmm.
like, I see that one as being the, but I really see that you wrote more into this verse, even the things that are unsaid sometimes.
Exactly.
Leave
see,
your imagination.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot. I wrote a story about a character, and it was about, actually it was one of my Sword and Soul stories where it's a husband and wife team that were mercenaries, and they settled down into this city. And the wife met an old boyfriend of hers who was a mercenary as well. And he was talking about he was in town because there was this one guy who was going to be paying a lot of money for this trip, this adventure that he wanted to go on. And she started having these old stirrings about, man, it's been a long time since I've been on an adventure. I'm settled down. And so her husband, you know, she talks about it, and her husband says, look, you know, if you want to do this, go ahead and do it. You know, I know it's in you. You want to go on this last adventure, so go. But the funny thing about it was that the story was about her. But the character, the guy who she met, everybody who read the story is like, you know, yeah, I really like Kadira. I like the story. But this guy, Omari, I really like him. He was, you know, he was something else. So, and I'm like, everybody's liking Omari, and the story's not about Omari. What's going on? So I actually ended up writing a story about Omari because of that.
There you go.
And it actually ended up becoming a popular series. I've written about three stories about him now, and everybody likes him because he was, you know. So it's kind of funny how, you know, like you say, you write a story about one particular character, but there'll be another character in there, a secondary character that other people will relate to. And you end up developing a whole nother world around that character.
Exactly.
Okay,
I love
now
that's
got to be a good feeling.
Well, it is. You know, writers are selfish. We write for ourselves first. You know, we sit down and write a story. We're not really thinking about anybody else. We're thinking about this is what I want to see and this is what I want to write about. And then you basically go out and try to find people that feel the same way you do about it. It is a good feeling that people, you know, can connect with what you're writing about, especially when they see the story the same way you see it. And that's when you really feel good about it. Say, okay, this is what I was trying to say, or this is what I was trying to talk about, and the fact that people connected with it. Like even when we write, part of the reason that I write stuff based on African culture and history is because I want people to learn about it, and I want people to be interested in it. And when you're trying to tell somebody about a country or historical dates and stuff, their eyes glaze over. But if you connect it with a character that they like, then all of a sudden, you know, you're not learning about the Swahili city-states because you have to learn about it. You're learning about it because that's where Changa lives. And you like Changa. So you want to know about what Changa is doing and stuff, you know. So I actually had a guy who read Changa Safari in Australia. And he sent me an email because he said he had no idea about that history, about that culture in East Africa until he read Changa. He read the book and said, is this true? Let me go research it. And he researched it, and he found all this information. And that's what, to me, that's what fiction does, and that's what fiction can do. You know, it can enlighten people about certain areas and subjects and situations that they would normally would have no interest in. But because they read it in this story and they connected with that character, now they want to know something about it, you know.
And can I say one thing about that? Okay, so since you mentioned that, it's great when you have these true, you know, that's a real place. But that was the problem, or not the problem, but an issue with Black Panther. Everybody was so caught up in Wakanda, and there's really not a Wakanda out there. So it's like people were like, love the story. I love the movie, absolutely loved it. But I was just so amazed at how many people wanted to move to Wakanda. That does not exist.
Well, when you look at it from an African American standpoint, it would be a nice place to be. The thing I liked about the movie so much is because when I was watching, I had to make myself be quiet because I was seeing all the different cultural references. It's the same kind of stuff that, you know, I said it as I was doing it. And my wife's sitting there next to me, and I wanted to look over and say, hey, you see that building right there? They got that from this. You see that outfit right there? They got that from that. But I said, no, let me be quiet because I'm going to ruin this whole movie for you. And then I had friends of mine saying, you know, hey, man, you know, I went to that movie, and all I did was I was thinking about your books because, you know, I read your books, and it's kind of similar to that. And I was telling one of my cousins, he made me laugh. He said, man, I went to see Black Panther, and I think they owe you some money. And I said, no, that when you have the same sources that you research, you're going to come up with similar things. Because there's certain things about African history throughout the continent in different cultures that just kind of stand out. And those
right.
are the ones that you end up focusing on to use as a source and stuff. So, you know.
Right. I can't wait to read your work.
Oh, honey, I know we're going to be, you have to have a good tour bus driver while we're reading all of Milt's books. So if you want to call in the number 646-716-9922, or you can message up to me a question, and I've got a couple of comments or questions being messaged in. But I want to say, first of all, you were mentioned, two things real quick for people to check out. You were mentioned in a lot of places, but two or three days ago, in the BillyPenn.com site, Alex Smith has a feature. If you love Black Panther, these eight works extend the Afrofuturist thrill. And the works that he listed, Alex Smith listed, were not all books. Some of it was music, Sun Ra, A Joyful Noise, mm-hmm. Seize the Time, Bobby Seale, which, of course, Bobby Seale with the Black Panther Party, being a this is true. This is not fiction. This
yep.
is probably more of a memoir,
mm-hmm.
more like a historical memoir, really, and other things. And then, and of course, in there he had, and other music, too, but also he put in The City by Milton J. Davis and says Milton Davis, who co-curates with, please pronounce the name for me the first time.
His name is Balogun Ojitade.
Balogun
yeah.
Ojitade, the seminal
yeah.
FB group of yeah. Slate of Black Science Fiction, coined the phrase cyberpunk. But they said The City is the culmination of the vision of semi-experimental anthology that weaves 18 semi-connected stories from 18 different writers. Many share the high-minded tech wizardry and philosophical nuances of Black Panther and The Matrix. It's a powerful work that pulses with, vibrates with a lucid clarity. So that was a short list of eight items out of everything that's there, and of course you're on there. And the other thing is that you also have a nomination from a British group right now, don't you, for an award?
Yeah, I was nominated in the long list for the short fiction award from the British Science Fiction Association. I was in part of my story was in an anthology called Steampunk Writers Around the World, and
oh,
I submitted a story. I submitted a story based on an African steampunk story called The Swarm, and it was one of the nominees. I didn't make the short list, but it was kind of neat to be nominated for in the long list.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And there were a number of other writers from the anthology that got nominated as well. So the publisher was very happy about that. So,
good job.
But the city was a great project because it was a Black spectral fiction jazz project because it came from me. I made a statement on a group we have called the State of Black Science Fiction. And just kind of like throwing this concept out. And I posted up some images to go along with the concept. And then all of a sudden, all these other writers started to, you know, chime in with their own interpretations of the concept and adding photos to it. So we were just doing this for like two or three days. And finally, I said, look, guys, we need to make an anthology out of this.
You know, good
idea. Because the main thing was, what is the city? What's the city all about? So we started putting the stories together, and what was really neat, one of the people who was looking at the thing was a brother from England, and he was a DJ and a composer. So he actually started yeah. composing music to go along with the different ideas that we were coming up with. So we had all this stuff rolling together and stuff. So that's basically where it came from. It's based on a concept where these people are living in this city, and they don't know how they got there. They don't know who controls the city. They're all connected by their version of the internet, which is called the wave. But instead of you having to log into the internet, you actually log into a part of your brain, which is a part that you were born with. And so you're always connected. You're never not connected. And things happen in the city that can't be explained. You know, buildings may collapse and the next day they're back up. And nobody knows
Whoa.
Who did the work, that kind of stuff like that. So the stories all take place in this mysterious city, and you have to be careful because if you defy or go against the city, these things called watchers will show up, and they'll take you away.
Oh, my.
So,
have you heard, Milton, do you know the podcast Welcome to Night Vale?
Yeah, my daughter is a big fan of Night Vale. She's a huge fan of Night Vale.
Big fan of Night Vale. Okay. Yeah. So if you, so folks, I think if you love that, I think his daughter will tell you that if you, Alana, what's her name? Alana will tell you,
yes,
if you like
Alana,
Welcome to
yes.
Night Vale, you'll like.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah, that, but it's a cool concept.
Well, listen, I've got some.
Go ahead.
I've got a question for you here, or some comments from. And this is from Duffy Odom in Adel, Georgia, and he is he's also a writer, and he, for a few years he was on he had a TV show on Comedy Central with Fred Willard. But he says, he wanted to ask about, and I'm going to read through this. He has, I guess while he's been waiting for me to say this, you know, he had some more comments, questions. Want to know if you like Iceberg Slim, you know, who your influences are. Do you? Does he like Iceberg Slim and Donald Goins and William Mosley and those guys? What do you think? Well, Black Panther and superheroes like Luke Green and Black Lightning. Also, he wanted to ask you about urban crime fiction writers, George Pelicanos, Richard Price, Dennis Lehane, Chester Himes, and I think the last one, he wants to know if Ralph Ellison was a major influence of yours, or Samuel Delaney.
Oh, man, he's all
just
over the place.
Just start anywhere you want. Listen, my listeners
read,
are very interesting and fascinating people.
Out of all the writers that he mentioned on there, I have not read all of them. I've read Goins. I've read Walter Mosley. I've read Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man, which is like one of the best books I ever read in my life. Because it is the best explanation of the situation of black people during the time when Ralph Ellison wrote it. And when I read that book, I was just like, oh man, this book is just amazing. After I read, I told everybody I knew, man, you need to read this book. You need to read this book. I'm not much into, and a lot of my friends get mad, I'm not much of a comic book fan. I was a comic book fan by association because two of my best friends were big comic book fans, and they had a big collection. So everything I knew about comic books, I knew through them. I was aware of Black Lightning, I was aware of Black Panther, but I wasn't really into the comic books as much as I was into the science fiction, you know, books when I got into college, that kind of thing. Because up until college, I was basically reading nonfiction. One of the writers that he didn't mention that probably also had a big influence on me was James Baldwin. I read some James Baldwin when I was in high school. It's a story behind it. I got food poisoning when I was in high school, and I had to sit out of school for a week. And my sister was a big reader. She read a lot of black fiction, and she just dropped all her books on me. She said, "Here, you're out of school, read these." And it was like Langston Hughes, James Baldwin, people like that. And I really liked James Baldwin because I liked the way he was able to describe things with very few words. And he would paint these pictures, and that's what I strive for in my style when I write. I say, you know, this guy writes perfectly. This is what I like, you know. So I try to do the same thing when I write. So I say he probably had the biggest influence on me as far as my writing style because of the books that I read by him. So you know, it's a wide variety of different influences. A lot of my science fiction really comes from some of the classic writers. I've read Delaney. Delaney is a hard read. he's a hard read. You have to really be dedicated to read Delaney's work. It's good, but he has so many things going on that when you read his book, sometimes you have to sit there and think a little bit and say, maybe I need to read this again. I don't think I got everything out of it that I was supposed to get out of it. So it's a number of different, you know, influences that, you know, that come into what I read and what I've been reading and stuff, you know. So each one of them has a little, like, a difference. Some of friends of mine are more influenced by some of the other writers than others, like Iceberg Slim and some of the other writers like that. But I've never read, I've I've heard of Iceberg Slim, and his stuff is very popular when you start talking about inner city fiction and different things like that.
Right.
But I haven't read a lot of that.
Yeah, I've read a lot of all of them, Iceberg Slim, Donald Goins, all of them. And I guess it was in phases of my life, I think, as I was introduced to different authors like that. I remember being really young when I started reading those books, and I was kind of introduced to another part of life that I actually didn't know existed. So opened my mind to, wow, this really happens, like, you know, and I'm from Georgia. I'm from the very rural part of Georgia. The city life was very not in my life.
I'm from Columbus, Georgia. And I got the same experience, but I got it through nonfiction. Like when we were one of the books that I read coming up was called by Claude Brown, it was called Man Child in the Promised Land. And it was about a guy who grew up in the projects, you know, grew up in the hood, and he talked about his experiences. I think it was during one of the riots, it was in Detroit or something like that. And I was reading all these stories, and plus when we were in school, in middle school, we had to read this book called The Vice Lords, which was about it was actually a nonfiction book about this gang in Chicago called The Vice Lords and stuff, you know. So I was reading about stuff like that, but I was reading it from a nonfiction standpoint. I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, small city, you know, living in the suburbs, military family, you know, you had to be in the house when the street light came on.
Exactly. Me too.
So, you know, seeing that aspect of it kind of came from, like you say, from reading and stuff.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I was able to live a different life, kind of like even through sci-fi and through that. My parents actually opened our minds up to the possibilities of there is more. Just never just settle for this part. There is more to learn. And my mom, now they listen more to ebooks a lot. My mom just got back into reading. She suffered a stroke, and she actually kind of got out of reading for a few years, but she's back into it. But, oh, my God, they listen to ebooks every single day.
Yep, I know a lot of friends of mine that do that as well, because, you know, when we have traffic, you know, you're in the traffic for about 2 or 3 hours. You might as well listen to a book.
Right. I mean, audiobooks. Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. Audiobooks. I'm sorry, I said ebooks. Audiobooks. Yeah, they listen to audiobooks all the time. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, it translated. We knew what you meant, Kenya. Yeah, I did the same thing. I loved when there was book radio on Sirius XM for a while. That was great, I'm on the road a lot. I love ebooks. How many of your books are in audiobooks?
I have not dipped my toe into that yet. I've been talking about it and thinking about doing it, but I haven't done it yet. That's something. Since I do, you know, since I self-publish, holds me back from doing a lot of stuff is that I'm looking at the cost of it, you know.
Right.
So I'm trying to find an economical way to do it, you know.
Definitely.
Well, I think we need to fire him up a little bit, maybe threaten him a little bit, Kenya. How about this? If you don't have one made, we'll do one, and you know you don't want my accent on there. So
you don't know now. I got a couple of my stories that actually take place in the South, so you'll be perfect.
All right, listen. Between me and Kenya both, we'll cover the stories for you. We'll go ahead and do a story, send it to you. Hey. Yeah.
You might not recognize it when it gets back.
Yeah, I've got some stories that you can throw some y'alls and mama nims and fencing and fixing too.
Well, I'm fixing to get my spear, okay? So.
Okay, there you go. Can I tell you something? I love how much you love what you do. I can hear that you live this stuff. That is amazing to me for somebody who actually hadn't been doing this your whole life. You picked it up in college.
Yeah,
most
thank
people
you. I mean,
who love this, the kids.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's fun to write and to I mean, I like the whole process. I like creating the stories. I actually like building the books. I like picking out my cover artists. You know, it's just
wow.
the whole process. And that's one reason that I tell people I'll always be indie, because I just like the whole process. I like, you know, taking it through the whole process and then having that book in your hand, knowing that, you know, you work with people and you put all that together and stuff. And as soon as you get that book done, you say, okay, let's do the next book. You know, that kind of thing. You know? I tell you, I celebrate like 10 minutes for 10 seconds, and I say, okay, it's time to do the next book. You know, I got to say, you know. So it's fun, man.
That is cool. I'm looking forward to reading.
And you know what? This has been so much fun. And we are going to definitely, I'm going to be sharing links where you can buy Milton Davis's books on all of my social media, on Facebook and on Instagram and everywhere else. I've got Twitter, Tumblr. I'll be sharing
cool.
it everywhere. Milton, anything you've got coming up, anything we could do. We would love for you to come back sometime.
Oh, I'd be
yes,
happy to be
yes.
back. I just have to watch the bees the next time. I think I'll be.
Wait, watch the what?
Watch
the bees.
Coming through.
But see, you're good now. You know the bees are there. So now.
Yeah. I'll wear a bicycle helmet the next time.
Exactly.
See, next time, you've been initiated now, and that way, next time it'll be your turn, you know, and you come in and it's like, oh, did that bee hit you? See, you must be a rookie here.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. I have enjoyed you.
Well, listen, thank you so much. And I'll be sharing, and I'm sure Kenya will as well. We'll be sharing links to your books
Definitely.
And your works all over our social media. We just wish you all the success in the world. You certainly deserve it, and your books are fantastic. And we just are so proud to have you spend this much time with here at Madame Perry Salon. Just thank you so much. And
thank you, guys.
Oh, and by the way, folks, do you like MST 3000, Mystery Science Theater, Milton?
I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear. Okay. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Well, one of the writers for Mystery Science Theater, or MST3K, is going to be my guest next week, Larry Johnson. Mm-hmm. And it's where the three guys, it's Frank Conniff and Trace Ballou, who both do a lot of stand-up now, and they're on Sirius XM a lot. It's like them and some robots are watching a movie, and they're riffing on the movie.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know you're talking about that. Yeah, I need to check that out.
Yeah, oh, it's hilarious. Well, like I said, one of the writers, Larry Johnson, lives in Atlanta, so he does this at a theater in Atlanta once a month. But he's going to be my guest next week. And don't forget, Monday night we had Paul Myers, and we were talking about his books, A Wizard of True Star, Todd Rundgren in the Studio, and I'm telling this to you and the audience. It Ain't Easy, Long John Baldry, The Birth of the British Blues. He's also Bare Naked Ladies, Public Stunts, Private Stories. And he's also got a new book coming out in the fall about the remember the comedy troupe, The Kids in the Hall?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
From Canada, it's called One Dumb Guy. And so that's already on pre-order for release in October. We'll be sharing that. So, hey, Kenya, it must be you.
Yes.
It must be you that brings the magic that I get so many cool people on the podcast here in Madame Perry Salon.
I'm just happy to be along for the ride.
I'm happy to have you riding here.
Can I ask Milton one more question? Milton, okay, so
yes.
I need to ship some books to my parents, but they're in Panama. Do you ship out of the country? Can you ship it?
Yes. I do ship out of the country. So we can talk about that.
Okay, definitely. Good. I'll get with you.
Okay.
I promise.
Okay, great.
All right. Fantastic. thank you to Becky Kyle for introducing me to Milton. Thank you for Duffy Odom for messaging in your questions. Of course, always all the love in the world to my BFF, Queen Diva Kenya Colbert, who will soon be back
I'm
on
here.
The air with Love Wins. And, hey, you're getting married. You need to make sure your wedding, your union is officially blessed. You're going to want to get Reverend Kenya to officiate your wedding for you. Or if, say you're already married and you want to have a renewal of vows. My husband always says, what does that mean that they're do they expire or something? Call Kenya. Anyway, and don't forget, Milton Davis, we love you, and you know I love everybody. Thank you for listening. And you know what I say? Everybody's got to swing. Goodbye. I love you so much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.